You shall not go to the ball.
Hello, welcome to Popcorn and Prosecco, a weekly movie review podcast. And this week, we have Christy Puchko, we have our co-host Angie Han.
Hello.
And Perry Nemiroff is actually at South by Southwest. We got her in for the first quick and dirty review of It Follows. But joining us for our main review, we have Rebecca Pauly from Film Journal International. Say hey, Rebecca.
Hey.
Okay, so first we're going to cut to a quick review of It Follows with Perry. Ta-da!
So our Hot Topic section this week is going to go for a movie that I adore. It's called It Follows, and it's an independent horror film that is incredible. And here's the IMDb synopsis, or wherever it came from. Following a strange sexual encounter, a teenager has disturbing visions and the inescapable feeling that someone or something is after her. This is easily one of the best horror movies I've seen since The Babadook. If this movie had come out last year, it definitely would have been in my top 10 movies of the year, and definitely at the top of my top horror movie list, too. I just thought it had such a fresh feeling to it, and it was so nice to see a horror movie that played a little slower and let you live with the characters a little more and wasn't just so scare-based. And the concept to me is just genius. I mean, I don't know how much that really explains everything, but Micah Monroe plays this girl named Jay who sleeps with another guy, and what essentially happens is she contracts a sexually transmitted disease.
It's like a curse.
It's a curse, and so now this, like, creature slash being slash monster, whatever you want to call it, it's just like a creepy looking person, is always walking in a straight line towards her. So
it changes shape and she's the only one that can see it.
It could be someone she knows, it could be someone she doesn't know, but what she can do is, like, she can drive like hours out of the way, have a little chill time, but like it will catch up eventually. So she has to be on her guard all the time. And like that whole concept to me was so disturbing that like there's just no time for like sleep, relaxation. Like, you're just screwed. And even if you pass it on to someone else, if it kills that person, it comes back to you. So there's really no rest at all.
I really like the concept a lot, but I feel like I almost want to tell people to lower their expectations a little, because I went seeing this hearing, oh my God, it's the most amazing thing. It's so incredible. Best original. And like, I liked it okay, but I found some moments like deeply scary, but the execution of the monster started to get less and less interesting to me, because the whole thing is supposed to be that you can't potentially know if it's just a person behind you or if it's this thing, but then there start to be identifying features that it's definitely the thing. Like, it kind of detracted for me a little bit, because it kind of overshot its design, I think.
I had a similar problem with Christy, where, like, I liked it, but to be perfectly honest, I probably would have liked it more if I hadn't gone in hearing things like, oh, it's like, it might even be better than The Babadook. It is not better than The Babadook.
I would definitely never say that, but it's up there. I think it's up there.
I don't know. I mean, I think the concept is really fresh. I think that the whole, like, idea of, like, something following you, it works really well. Like, I actually, unlike Christy, it didn't start to fall apart for me when they were easier to pick out, throughout the whole movie, like, sometimes they don't even sense that they're being followed, and you kind of see it in the frame before they do. And I swear to God, like, my whole way home from the screening, I just kept feeling like I was being followed. It was so creepy. So on that level, it's really effective. It's a pretty good movie. It's got a fresh concept, but there's some things that didn't work for me. Like, there's one character whose only purpose is to just kind of hang out there and, like, read quotes from books or something. Yeah. The third act, the whole entire, like, climactic, the entire climax, I was just like, I don't even know what you were going for or what's going on or why we're doing this.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed
just
in,
like,
how
like that.
That's a very fair complaint.
Well, they set up a journey of trying to figure out what the monster is and how to defeat it, and then I feel like that journey gets diffused, and that's where I kind of lost interest.
I do want to point out that this is also one of the best scores I've heard in a very, very long time. Like, that theme, and it comes in at the perfect time. Like, watch out for this scene where, like, the camera's behind them and they're walking up to a big building, and it's, like, the theme that's in the trailers all of a sudden just, like, booms in, and it's just so perfectly timed. I love it.
Yeah, it's, like, very 80s synthesizer. It's very effective.
I thought it's a great movie. If you're a horror lover, I really couldn't recommend this more, because if you see a lot of horror movies, this is like one of the most fresh feeling ones that I've seen in months.
It's interesting. I thought it was really referential to a lot of 70s and 80s horror, not in like direct ways, but in tone and in kind of its fear of sex. I thought it was interesting, and I think if you're a horror fan, then yeah, you're going to want to see it. But I would say kind of manage your expectations, because I feel like if you went in like I did thinking this is going to blow you out of the water, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I'm with Christy. I also want to say, I just have a really quick question. Did this remind anyone else of like the Virgin Suicides a little bit in the beginning?
Oh, no.
Yeah,
I guess because I saw it recently. Maybe it's because I rewatched it recently, but that kind of
why
like,
have
cheesy,
we spoken
like,
about the Virgin Suicides multiple times? When did this last come up?
I don't know, but
I rewatched it
a couple weeks ago.
I talked about it with you guys recently. Yeah. All right. So go watch It Follows and the Virgin Suicides.
Not really a date movie situation.
Yeah, no. If you want to get laid after you go take your date to a movie, don't take them to see It Follows because they will not want to sleep with you.
Nope. And we're back. So this week we went to see Cinderella, and Angie's going to give us the rundown on what that's about.
All right, so here's a synopsis. When her father unexpectedly passes away, young Ella finds herself at the mercy of her cruel stepmother and her daughters. Never one to give up hope, Ella's fortunes begin to change after meeting a dashing stranger in the woods. By the way, if you just like heard the title of the movie, you probably didn't even need me to read that, but you know, that's what we do here. So this is directed by Kenneth Branagh. It stars Lily James as Cinderella and Richard Madden from Game of Thrones as the prince, and Cate Blanchett being fabulously fashionable as the wicked stepmother.
And let me just interrupt to say, Cate Blanchett is everything in this movie.
Except that I think the other characters who you would think would be less interesting actually do hold their own against her. I fucking love the shit out of this movie. Ugh. I was honestly not expecting
I want that on
to.
The poster. I fucking love the shit out of this movie.
I'm
Angie
really
Hunt.
Glad to know, like, my first podcast with you guys that I can curse.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Happy.
No, you can curse.
Yeah, we do that.
Curse of a storm.
Much to the remiss of our mothers.
Yeah, I feel like what was so great about this movie was, so I remember when they were developing it, Rebecca pointed out to me when we were talking about it on the way home, there was like a dark version with Mark Romanek that they were like developing, and then they were like, oh, never mind, we're gonna go in a different direction with Kenneth Branagh, and everyone was like, okay. But I actually feel like it worked really well. I think this movie kind of finds what, it kind of gets to the heart of Cinderella. It gets to like why this story has endured for centuries in so many different cultures and so many different iterations. So rather than like trying to like reinvent it or be like, oh, it's a story that's never been told, it's actually the same exact story told in mostly the same ways, but in a way where you like, when I was watching this, I felt like I was, even though I'm an adult who has seen Cinderella and like, you know, heard the story a million times, I felt like a kid watching Cinderella for the first time. Like,
what I really liked about it is that it explains things in the Cinderella story that I think do need some justification. My favorite thing is that they introduce you to Cinderella's mom, and her mom gives her some really great life advice, which is be courageous and be kind. And I thought that was really beautiful. And I like that Cinderella makes it a choice. It's not that she is so much a victim of her circumstances, in that she chooses to be courageous and to be kind. No matter what her stepmother and her evil stepsisters put her through, she chooses to be kind. And I find that really amazing. I actually everybody's crazy about this show now on Netflix called The Unsinkable Kimberly Schmidt.
Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, you completely butchered that.
Sorry, but I kept thinking of that watching this movie. I started watching Kimmy Schmidt today, and then we went to see Cinderella, and there's like a part where she gets caught in the rain and everything, and I was like, she is the unbreakable Cinderella, and I just thought that was really kind of wonderful that, like, Angie and I talk a lot about how, you know, Hollywood likes to give you strong female characters, and a lot of times it's literally like she's wielding an axe and stuff, and don't get me wrong, I love me some Katniss, but I was excited to see a strong female character who is strong of character, but not like doesn't have to bust heads to prove that. Like, Cinderella was someone I would aspire to be like. She reminded me of like a Leslie Knope or a Kimmy Schmidt, where it's not like no matter how bad your situation, you're gonna make this through because of your strength of character. And I thought it was a really beautiful story to tell. And then It was just a beautiful movie to behold. Like, oh my God, the costumes.
Yeah.
Like,
Rebecca,
literally.
What did you think?
Like, they didn't just, like, plop this character down and be like, she's a Disney princess, and she's gonna make all the right calls, and she's gonna look fabulous, and she, like, they actually had, like, that core and that mythos to her character. And so many movies nowadays, like, with what DC's trying to do with Superman, it's like, you gotta make him gritty. You gotta make him dark. And, like,
there's nothing cynical about this movie, and there's nothing
character winking.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it wasn't simple.
Yeah.
Like, there's not the idea of, like, if you're a nice character, then you're dumb.
Yeah, it felt like a very sincere film, and I was surprised that that was so effective. And I think part of the reason it's so effective is that it's sincere, but it's not generic. There is such a sense of style to this movie. And like, I could literally gagging on the extravaganza, the eleganza.
Yeah, it's got a very, very unique look, which is something that's been like a thing that has irked me about fantasy movies so much for the last few years, is how much all of them look like copies of Lord of the Rings. This one doesn't. It has such a specific look. You wouldn't mistake it for any other fantasy film. It actually is like, we're a fantasy movie, so you know what? We're not going to try to do the medieval thing. We're going to be fantasy. We're going to be weird. We're going to have like 90s butterfly clips and like giant poofy gowns that are the size of a Volkswagen Beetle,
and Cate Blanchett's vamping it up like a 1920s, yes. Like leaning on doors, and
yeah, there's a lot of references. Like there's some like stuff that seems very 80s, and there's some stuff that seems very 50s. These sweater dresses the stepsisters have on at one point, but like it all worked in the fantasy world they created. It was really beautiful and interesting, and like I there's when you first see Cinderella spin on that dress she has on the poster, I could have watched that for days. Like, the flow of that fabric is just witchcraft. It's so beautiful. And, like, I, you know, got all caught up. And, like, when I was, like, a teenager, I watched a lot of those movies that promised me that someday, somewhere, there was someone that was going to get me and see me for who I really was and all that kind of stuff. Because I was a teenage girl. And you feel like an ugly duckling. You feel like a goofball. You feel like no one notices you. And Cinderella feels that way because the only people she comes in contact with are her stepfamily, who loathes her. And then she meets this guy who thinks she's special and sees her as something wonderful. And like, to the prince's credit, he's not just Prince Charming. They actually give him, it's a small bit of arc, but they actually give him some business to do so that he's more than just the man that shows up on the horse and likes her a great deal. Like, it was really charming, and I really believe their love story, and I loved her story of perseverance. And I was enchanted. It's so
pretty. I think one of the things that was so great about this movie is, you know, we were talking about how it references a bunch of different eras, but it also just, the movie feels both new and classic in a really good way. Like, I could see people watching this movie 50 years ago. I could see them watching it 10 years ago. I could see them watching it 20 years from now, and it'll still, like, I think it'll still make sense. I hope it's going to be a classic. I imagine little kids like growing up watching the Cinderella, and it makes me happy.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to buy this for my niece as soon as it hits DVD. And my niece is like a month old right now.
Like the whole romance between Cinderella and Prince Charming, like it's so part of the cultural landscape now. And so, I mean, it's almost gotten bland over the years. It's like, we know what happens. He's charming. She's cute.
Is why they had to put a twist on it into the woods.
Uh-huh. But in this movie, like, you legitimately get the sense that these are two people who are compatible and they like each other and they're both dorks. And
it was a
genuinely romantic movie.
They have a really adorable, it's a solid meet cute. And that's when they like got me to like get, because it's the guy who played Robb Stark. He's a handsome guy and he's charismatic, but like, there's a moment where she doesn't realize he's a prince in this version, which is very sweet. And also very, it's very sweet. And so he says his name is Kit. And then his, like, people show up and they're like, you're, and they start to say Highness. And he goes, Kit, Mr. Kit. And it was so, like, it's so, like, da-da-da-da-da-da rom-com. But it played so well and it was so cute. And, like, I think, you know, Kenneth Branagh directed tons of Shakespeare movies. And then brought all of that kind of world building and all that sense of grandeur with the sense of levity to it into this, and it's just beautiful. I really, and I know it's a little early to be like top tens of 2015, but
it's
like
gonna be,
watching
it's probably
this,
gonna
I was
be
like,
in mine.
Everything just works together so well. Like the sounds, amazing and just epic. Cate Blanchett's costumes. I mean, I don't think any of us, no offense to any of us, could ever pull any of them off, but I want to. I mean, I don't know, Christy, do you think you could pull off the, like, lounging against? I'm sure
I would
could.
Like, I'm going to say, because the chance of me ever getting to have a costume like that are rare, I think I could pull it off.
Right,
I think I could put
right.
a little arm up. I just love, she kept, like, voguing in those costumes and doing these gestures that I was just like, she was living for it. Like, also RuPaul's Drag Race is on every Monday now, and so I'm watching those too, and I just kept being like, oh, she should be on RuPaul's Drag Race because girl gets it. Like,
yeah. I mean, well, we're talking about how this is such an earnest movie and how good of a character she is. And I feel like this movie actually, like, everyone knows the Cinderella story, we've all heard it, but this movie actually earns every step of it. Like, you know, you were talking about how, like, it's a choice for her to be good, and you actually see how hard it is for her a lot of the time, and how it's something that she actively has to work at, rather than, like, I feel like when you're a kid and you hear the story for the first time, it's just kind of told as, like, once upon a time, there was a girl who was really good, and that's it. She's just good because she's good.
Yeah.
And it makes it so much more powerful that you kind of see her actually struggling a lot of times. Like, it's not that this goes down, like, some, like, really dark, like, she's not a tortured antihero or anything. And also it's just that, like, it's, you see that she actually is in danger of being, like, broken down, and, you know.
And it makes her more relatable. I remember as a kid watching those things, and, like, I loved Cinderella, and I loved Sleeping Beauty, and I watched them over and over, but I was not a quiet, obedient child. Shocker. You know, I was kind of rowdy, and so when I saw these things, I would occasionally worry, like, was I still a good girl, even though I had these lapses? And I like that we see her make that as a choice. It's not, like you said, it's not, and even Lady Tremaine, who is what the name they give the stepmother in this, she gets a moment where we get a little more background on her than you typically get, and I like that, because it doesn't justify who she is, but it underlines the theme of, you have a choice. And it kind of, like, I mean, you can think of it like Paranorman, like, terrible things can happen to you, but you get to choose how you deal with them. And I thought that was a really great lesson for kids. Like, I think it's a good message. And it's, you know, it's wrapped in this pretty ornate thing. I just want them, like, I was actually, like, they have these really beautiful dolls at the Disney store, and I kind of may have to go buy a Lady Tremaine doll, because, like, she's my new hero, guys.
In the Disney movie, though.
Sorry?
Like, I'm pretty sure. Like, I don't think they ever said it, but...
I think I've actually heard that before. You're right.
I'm pretty, like, that was the original Disney cartoon.
So, is there anything else you want to say before we go into the spoilers, which is even a ridiculous sentence to say because, you know, everyone already knows how this ends?
Yeah, I think we can just go into spoilers.
All right. Not that anyone on Earth needs a spoiler warning for Cinderella. Of old
fairy tale.
Well, you know, okay, spoiler. The Reigns of Castamere start playing during the wedding.
Oh, yeah. Rebecca and I were talking about this, and we're like, wait, Robb Stark, you've done the I was a prince that married for love thing once before, and we remember how that ended, and it was not well.
Well, that's actually part of why I was so happy, was, like, you get fun, like, if you're super into certain shows like Game of Thrones or Downton Abbey, it's nice to see these people get a payoff, because in this, his dad dies too, but then he gets that lovely moment where he curls up with his dad, and it's like, he doesn't just get, like, a fucking crow that's like, yeah, your dad got beheaded, deal with it. And then the girl from...
And they get a nice talk before with his dad. They're like, I love you, dad. I love you, son.
Yeah, I was, like, getting choked up on behalf of Ned Stark, who is not in this movie, but that's okay. I have feelings that I contain multitudes. And then the girl from Downton Abbey, who in, like, Downton Abbey was Daisy and was, like, scrubbing pots and was always covered in soot and, like, couldn't get a, like, break for season after season. In this, she's the rich mean girl. And I was kind of like, I'm excited for you. Because, yeah, like, for four seasons on that show, she has to wear, like, stuff that looks like it's been spilled on and looks messy. And all these other girls get to wear these, like, ornate fashions. And now she gets all these crazy fashions. I was like, yeah, hooray for everyone.
I do want to talk about something that's in the ending, where we were talking about how this is the same basic story as Cinderella, but it's fleshed out. And I thought that they actually did a pretty good job of, like, making the ending work. Like, they give Cinderella a good reason why she can't go after Robb Stark. Sorry, Prince Charming, Kit. Even though she clearly wants him, it's because it's actually her being good and brave again. Like, that's, you know, she's making a choice to turn down her only real chance at love because she wants to protect him and protect the kingdom. And I thought that, and the other thing is, we were talking about how, like, oh, this is a movie where strong female characters aren't, like, it doesn't end with, like, Enchanted with, like, oh, and then she picks up a sword and she slays a dragon and that's how you know she's a badass. Like, this is a movie that climaxes on just her being like, you know what, it's a tough decision, but I'm gonna make this decision because it's the right thing to do.
And her being kind and courageous are never portrayed as, like, gender and feminine traits, because it's specifically stated, like, he has the exact same traits, that they are the exact same person. Like, this is such a good movie for little girls.
And she inspires him to that, too, because, like, she says stuff and he's like, yeah, like, right. And, like, I like that as a couple, because I feel like, you know, it's nice to see a movie couple presented to children that reflects, like, we can support each other and we can bring the best out of each other. And I think Kit and Cinderella do that. And I thought that was really lovely. And, like, I just, I,
Whereas in other iterations of the movie, it's just like they meet and they fall in love.
Yeah, and like in this, they actually get to know each other, and then she kind of just wants to go see him again, and then like it's implied that they kind of they, like, have an hours long date while everyone else at the ball is like, where the fuck did the prince go? Like, I thought that was also charming and relatable, and
I think Rob, oh my god, I keep wanting to call him Rob Stark, Richard Madden, I think sells the shit out of the, like, giddy I just met a girl thing. Like, he's adorable in this. Like, he's like, you see him, like, right after where he's, like, talking about this girl he met, and he, like, he nails it. You know that look that your friend gets when, like, there's, like, a smile that they can't quite contain, and they, like, can't really stop talking about this person, and, like, it's...
He's, like, writing Mr. So Kit Cinderella in his notebook with little hearts on
He would
eyes.
Be if he knew her name. Of course, if he knew her name, then the rest of the movie would not have had to happen. So we should wrap up soon, but any final thoughts?
There was one thing that, like, just to be negative, I guess, to even it out, there was one thing that I wasn't like 100% sold on with Cinderella, which is that like everybody's, it's so earnest and so happy, but like everyone's unrelentingly happy all the time. Like, well, there's that moment when after the ball and she's like, I'm never gonna see the prince again in my entire life, and she's okay with it, more or less.
I thought she kind of made her peace with it, and that's what I read it as.
I would have liked to have seen, like, a little bit of conflict, a little bit more of maybe her being sad that's about it, and then the moral resolution that she had, I felt, would have been a little more earned. Like, nobody's allowed to have negative feelings in this movie for more than 90 seconds.
I think that's true, because she has that moment where she breaks the plate, and it's like, I think it's just for her, there's no upside to breaking, you know? Her breaking, it's not a win for her.
I kind of felt like...
I feel like during the middle of the movie, things got a little overly frothy for me.
Okay.
And that's just me. It's, like, very minor.
Yeah, I can see that. I totally understand that criticism. Overall, though, I thought it was wonderful. I think that, you know, this is a movie that little girls are going to love, and that I think there's value in little boys seeing it too. It's quite wonderful.
I think little boys would honestly love this movie. It's not like, I mean, there's dresses and stuff, and I guess if you're a boy that's like, you're not allowed to ever like a movie about a girl in a pretty dress, but it's first of all, it actually does have a pretty strong male character, like Rob Stark.
Prince Charming's never a character before.
He's actually like a main character. Rather than just like a prize, as he is in some other tellings of the story.
And he has a quick change. That quick change made me so happy.
The what?
Like when they do the reveal on the horse and he does like keep changing.
Yes. The Velcro outfit.
He's like, yeah.
I
actually, you know, legit, I think I had more like squeals of delight and excitement in this movie than I did in 50 Shades. For slightly different reasons.
They have better chemistry, and to be honest, that scene where he puts the shoe on her foot, I was like, this isn't sex, but it's sex. It was.
Yes.
Right?
Come into my secret garden, play on my swing.
Yeah.
It was cute. Yeah. I can't recommend this movie enough. I think Cinderella is delightful.
Yes. So all of the thumbs up, basically.
All right. So we're going to move into the game section. And last week's game, we asked you to name the sequel to Chappie. And our winner is Craig Wagner, or possibly Craig Wagner, at Krieg86. His proposed sequel is Chappie 2, The Pursuit of Chappiness. We had some really good answers this week, but Craig, yours was our favorite. So if you want to enter this week, and we'll give you a shout out next week, our game is based on some movie news. Sony is apparently also going to do a movie about Ghostbusters fronted by dudes, whereas Deadline had called it, and has apparently since revoked the headline, a guy-themed Ghostbusters. So we're curious. The Paul Feig one is happening with lots of women in it that we're very excited about. And then there's going to be this other Ghostbusters movie with dudes. What should this Ghostbusters movie be called? Tweet at us at Popcorn Prosecco and let us know. And that's it for this week. You can find us on the web at popcornprosecco.com. We're on YouTube. We're on iTunes. We're on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. We're on Facebook. You can check us out and like us. Subscribe, and review on iTunes. It's a big help to us. And you can find us on the web. I'm at Christy Puchko, and my career highlights can be found at decadentcriminals.com. Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And Rebecca, where can we find you on the web?
I am on Twitter at Rebecca Polly. That's P as in Peter, A-H-L-E. And my personal site is cinephiles.com and Film Journal International. Filmjournal.com.
You can find Perry at P. Nemiroff, and she writes for Collider.com, and she's going to be at South by Southwest. You can check out all that, and she'll be back with us next week. So thank you for joining us, Rebecca. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we got to just girl out over Cinderella. Ella, Ella, Ella. No? No one wanted to join in? Come on, that was good stuff.
Remember of the last bell at the last stroke of midnight. The spell will be broken.